What is shaking, party people in the place to be? Kind of hard being big old stupid dumb ass me. That was a horrible beginning. How you guys doing out there? Doing a special Labor Day podcast. Yay for Labor Day. So I'm actually recording this on Tuesday. Tuesday the 28th of August. So who knows? For all I know, there's going to be tons of shit that happens this weekend that I'm going to want to be talking about on Monday. I'll talk about it on Tuesday. Just for now, I want to give you a little something to listen to on Monday so that there's not a big gap. Because I worry. I worry like a fat chick worries she's going to lose her boyfriend. I worry that I've got a few listeners out there that I've picked up that I'm holding on to and caressing you to my soft, supple bosom. And I don't want to have a 3-day weekend happen where you turn around and say, huh, haven't heard that dude in 72 hours. Fuck that podcast. Boop, no more download. So I'm trying to keep it up. I'm trying to keep it to the 5 days a week no matter what. So I'm doing this special little Tuesday podcast that's going to show up on a Monday. I don't know, whatever it is, 6 days after I record it. If I die before then, I'd like to talk to you from the grave. Ooh, there is no afterlife. The meaning of life is that there is no meaning. I don't know. If I died and I could say something to other people, I would say, don't waste your life. Life is too. See, you want to say something noble and meaningful. But when I try and think, like, I'd probably say something like, please, God, tell me that someone cleaned the doo-doo off of me before the funeral. Or they, like, did I die masturbating? Please don't let that happen. If I did, why don't we just make it look like I was doing something else? Make it look like I was writing a letter to the President of the United States with no shirt on. Whatever you have to do, just clean it up for me. Just go in there. If I died doing something stupid, make it look like I did something noble, no matter what it is. If I dive into the shallow end of a pool and break my neck, what you do is you take me to the deep end of the pool and you say, one of the kids was drowning and James tried to save them. And it was just so very heroic. Just please don't leave me in the shallow end with my feet hanging out of the water, like up on the coping with my head down, and have a bunch of people walk up and say, what a fucking idiot. It says right there, no diving in the shallow end. Why'd he think to do it? My wife would have to say, well, because he swam in high school, that he can dive wherever he wants and be okay, like he's a circus freak. But obviously he couldn't. That wouldn't be good. Pick me up out of the shallow end, put me in the deep end. I was being heroic. Or put me on the coping and just claim that someone tried mugging me. They thought I had my wallet. And just leave it at that. You know, I just don't want to be remembered for something bad. So if I do bad stuff between now and Monday and then I die, please, someone get a message to my wife. First of all, that I'm doing a podcast. She doesn't know about this. And then secondly, to let her know that I want it to be cleaned up and made noble. Just noble, like, whatever. Just at this point, let's just make it a huge lie. No matter what happens. Like if I die during autoerotic asphyxiation, just say that I had decided to be a knight of the queen and I was moving to England and I was in training for my armor. I was going to do a crusade to kill a bunch of people in the Middle East to try and convert them to Christianity while I was in a search for artifacts from Jesus's life. That would work. I think people would be okay with that. I think at the funeral, more people would cry as opposed to he had a belt around his neck and he died jacking off. I don't want my kids to think about that. I want them to think, my dad died nobly. Because, you know, I look at my dad's death. And he didn't die nobly. But he didn't die not. He just died on the street. Well, not on the street. On the sidewalk. In a driveway. And that's not very cool. We should have lied. We should have been like, he was chasing this dude that was trying to break into my... Because he died in the driveway of my sister's house, but she wasn't home. We should have said, he was chasing a dude that was trying to break into the house. And then he just, like, fell over and grabbed his chest. And then the dude walked up and kicked him, like, three times. He was like, and I think he broke a couple ribs, and then he ran away. But now my dad's, like, dying. That would seem noble. Yeah, he's just like, he walked up and he was looking at this car that he had bought my sister that he was going to have to sell because she couldn't make the payments on it. And he said, oh, I think I'm going to faint. And then he fell over and died. Yeah, those are horrible last words. See, I would lie about that too. I would say, his last words? His last words were wonderful. His last words were, I think that truth can be noble without having to be understood. Die. Like, whatever. Or I would say something like, don't play with a pen while you're doing a podcast because people will hear it. I've noticed that. I've listened back to a couple of them, and I'm like, dude, what is going on? Like, the mathematics one, I was listening to that, and I was like, what is that noise? And I realized there's a printer that kept going off in the background in the beginning. What's up with that? Now, see, I could lie. I could make it noble. I could say I was listening to the mathematics podcast, and there were robots fighting in the background, and I had to destroy the robots. Earth is safe. I'm going to go and get my Medal of Honor now. No, I admitted it was a printer. I'm not good at that. See, that's why I would need someone else to come up with the noble things I would say and do when I died, because I'm kind of just an honest dude, and I'll just blurt out things in a naive manner, thinking, oh, I got to tell the truth, and then I sound like an ass. Kind of had that problem my whole life, where I'll just tell the truth, and then I'll look stupid, and people are like, why did you tell the truth? And it's like, truth is good and fun. I don't know, maybe I'm just not creative enough to think of a good lie quickly. Although I like how I can make shit up quickly when I know it's a ridiculous lie. I could make up a story about a lesbian robot on Mars. That'll take me 2 minutes. The lesbian robot on Mars will die because it'll be alone. And there's not a really good way. Maybe Curiosity. That's why they named it Curiosity. Oh, my God. People, listen up. It is time to get this out to the news outlets. The Curiosity rover on Mars is a lesbian. And I know now why they named it Curiosity. When that rover was at its first year of rover college, that rover kind of took a liking to some of the other chicks at school who probably played lacrosse or were on the softball team. And it said, I like how you dress like a lumberjack. Maybe we could kiss. And they kissed. And then they might have done a little GG rubbing. GG rubbing like the bonobos do. Which is genital to genital rubbing. Kind of how some lesbians do it. Some people call it scissoring. I don't know. Just curious, I guess, the robot was. And they sent it to Mars. And now it sits up there and it roves around on Mars and takes pictures because, like every other curious chick, it has decided it's a photographer. So it takes pictures on Mars, and soon enough it'll download Instagram and begin releasing those back to NASA. And it'll say, I'm a photographer, because we finally have the most advanced technology in the world that can send me to Mars and allow me to take pictures that look like they're old. Photographer! And it'll think back on the days when it was hanging out with its lacrosse robot girlfriend. And it'll miss its Labrador. It'll have a yellow lab back home. And it'll think, man, it was good being curious when I was younger. And it'll just slowly rove around, get some dust on it after a while. Its batteries will start getting weak. And then one day, it will try and shove a very large rock into its robot vagina and die. But NASA will tell us that the batteries just went dead. Because, see, NASA knows how to come up with a good, noble lie quickly. Me, not so much. If I died and then had to write my obituary, I'd say, tried shoving a big rock up his butt and he died. And then I'd try and scribble it out. No, I mean, he was climbing a mountain and fell down 100 feet while trying to grab a child who had also fell. Man, English is be hard for me talking sometimes. He fell off a mountain and was falling 100 feet, trying to catch a child who was also falling. And he was able to catch a child, and right before he hit the ground, he threw the child up in the air. And it worked out that he threw it just as fast as it was falling, so it equaled zero in its miles per hour. And then the child landed on his body and was safe. But his body landed on a rock, and the rock went up his butt and killed him. Obituary. Done. See? Maybe I could find a noble death. Maybe that's how I'll die. Maybe this weekend I will go try and climb a mountain and see if that actually happens. Because now I want to know if I'm falling, if right before I hit, if I could throw something fast enough that it would stop falling and then land on me and be okay. Or maybe. Maybe I'm just curious. Maybe I just want to have a big boulder up my butt. You never know. It is Palm Springs. They swing in Palm Springs. So, I am going to Palm Springs this weekend. And I got bad news about it. The bad news is we're staying at the Super Mansion, and the dudes who own the Super Mansion are totally selling it. So this is probably going to be the last day at the Super Mansion. And that's depressing. Because I really wanted to just stay there alone with my wife sometime. Because then we have a place that's not our house, and it's giant. And it's got like a pool and a casita and an outside fireplace and a 6-car garage and a giant mansion of a house. And we could just hang out and have the kids go somewhere else. That's not going to happen now. We're just going to have to rent a hotel room again sometime. Fun thing about renting hotel rooms is here's why I've decided I have to relax in hotels. It's not because I'm not home. It's not because I don't have to clean up. It's not because I get to sleep in. It's not because of any of those things. It's because if I maintain the level of stress I have at home in a hotel room, I'll die. Because I know in that hotel room, everything is covered in doo-doo. Just everything. You get out one of those UV black lights, and you scan it, and it's just doo-doo. Just doo-doo everywhere. And if it's not doo-doo, it's probably mango. And I don't want either of those on me. When I think about it a little bit, I begin to think about it too much. And it just becomes this herpes-infested AIDS den where my kid is crawling around on their hands and feet and eating things off the floor. And I can't take that. I'll just explode. So I must get to a zen state of relaxation. And that helps me relax in general. And I need to relax in general. I'm a high-strung dude a lot of the time. Most people wouldn't think it. Most people that meet me were like, you're really relaxed, dude. And it's like, well, I probably act calm around you because if I start letting that monster out, you're going to take about 10 steps back. And if I really start letting it out, if I really start saying, hey, listen, here's what we need to worry about. What's going on with that? I'm going to be hyper-vigilant about everything I see, hear, and do. Oh, my God, we got to worry. Everything's got to be worried. There's a worry here, and there's a worry there, and then that's a worry, and that's a worry, and that's a worry, and that's a worry. And we all got to worry. Your head will pop. I don't know how I make it through it. It's a funny thing, because my wife, you know, she'll want to get ready for stuff and look nice. And there are certain points where it starts to get to me a little bit. I'm pretty cool with it for the most part, but I'll be like, that's the fourth thing you put on in the past 15 minutes, and you're taking it off to put on the first thing you put on. Let's go. And she'll say, you know, as hard as it is to watch, imagine how hard it is to be like this. And I've decided, as hard as it is to watch me be stressed out and anxious, most people probably don't get how hard it is to be this stressed out and anxious. And I just hold it back. I'll just put it down. I'll swallow it down like a jagged little pill of broken glass and put it in my stomach where it will fester and turn black and rot and burn through my insides. But that's just for me. No one else ever gets to see that. I'm a nice guy to most people. They have no idea what I'm freaking out about every second. Probably shouldn't let that out. Anyway, I'm going to be at the mansion that's now going away, and that's sad. But I love this place. I'm probably going to try and put a picture up of this place when I get the chance, because it's a cool joint, and I really wish, you know, someday I could buy a place like that. It's a good time to be somewhere where you're like, I'm going to go outside. Do I want to go to the gigantic rock garden that is bigger than most people's backyards? No. Do I want to go to the outdoor patio with lawn furniture as big as my bed? No. Do I want to sit on the patio that has the gigantic chef's kitchen with a barbecue and a giant glass fireplace? No. Maybe I'll go play pool in the room in the casita that is a full-sized room with a big bed and a giant TV and a pool table and a full bathroom. No. Well, maybe I'll go to the other side of the casita that has the giant home theater that looks like a movie theater with these big reclining chairs, like six big reclining chairs in it, and a full bathroom. No. No, I'll go to the other yard that has a full-sized yard and a giant swimming pool and a jacuzzi. No. No, maybe I'll go to the garage, because the garage, the six-car garage, also has a really cool office in it with a full bedroom and a full bath. No, no, it gets hot in the garage. Maybe I'll go into the house. Well, I should go into, like, the servants' quarters of the house, because that's kind of nice, so I can kick back, lay on a bed and watch TV. No. No, maybe I'll go to, like, the entertainment room of the house with the grand piano and the poker table and the giant fireplace and the huge 12-person serving area. No, no, I'll sit in the giant living room with the many couches. And no, 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 I'll go to the master bedroom. I'll go to the master bedroom, and I'll sit on a huge, it's like emperor-sized bed, because it's bigger than any king-sized bed I've ever been on, that looks out into a sitting room with what has to be an 80-inch television and two leather reclining chairs. No, no, I feel a little icky. Maybe I'll take a shower in the shower that has more shower heads than I have fingers, and a little thing that you press and steam comes out. And then, no, no, I can't do any of that because they're selling this house. I'm not going to stay there anymore. It's depressing. It's depressing because these guys, you know, I won't say their names, but these guys own this place and they're selling it. And it was really cool to get to use it. I'm not going to get to use it anymore. And, you know, I live in Orange County, and the price of my house could buy a house like that outside of, you know, nowhere, Illinois. I mean, my wife talks about moving back east again because she's from the Chicago area. And I tell her, you know, for what we pay in Orange County, we'd be like fucking millionaires in Illinois. Like, we would be driving Mercedes and have a 12-bedroom house and some broad that came in and cleaned it every day and some dude that could drive us places, and we'd have a nanny for the kids, and we'd still have enough money that we'd be like wiping our asses with $100 bills. Oh God, I got no money. Yeah, because living in Orange County, not quite like that. Right now, living in Orange County, I have bill collectors reaching up my ass to try and pull bills out, and it doesn't feel good. But I am going to get to see my family. And that's going to be cool. Here's why that's going to be cool. Because my kids are really fun. Everybody loves their kids. I get that. And everybody's told, your kids are the best. And then people walk away and go, no, your kids suck. But some kids are really cool. Like Jay's kids are fucking cool. And I know that Jay's probably not going to hear this or listen to this. And Jay, if he did hear it, would be like, whatever, dude. But no, Jay's, like, his oldest kid is the reason I want to have kids. When I was younger, I didn't want to have kids. I always thought, you know what? Having kids is a selfish thing, and bringing kids into a painful world of anguish and nothing but despair and nothingness, that's kind of cruel. And I can't think of an unselfish reason to do that. And then Jay had his first kid, and his first kid was just awesome. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. You mean I could bring a human being into this world and they could be like this kid? If I could find a way to bring a kid into the world that's like this kid, I will have 100 kids, because this kid makes the world better. And she's just amazing. When I went through my divorce, just hanging out with her, just this pure little innocent awesomeness. totally just made it for me. And then he had a second kid. And his second kid was awesome. I was like, that's it. Time to have kids. And then I had my kid. And I do my best to learn from those around me. And I took what I could learn from Jay and from other people. And I've tried to make some good kids. And I think I've made some really awesome kids. Unfortunately, my wife really doesn't like being around my family. So my family doesn't get to see these awesome kids so much. Especially my brother. And, my brother. He doesn't come around so much anymore. He's made bad choices that I think he's ashamed of. And now he went from living like an $800,000 house to divorcing that wife and now shacks up with his girlfriend in a house that they rent. And it's all because of bad decisions he made. So I don't think he wants to come around because of that. And if he ever listens to this, dude, I'm not saying anything bad. If anything, I've made so many horrible decisions in my life that my brother's one or two really bad decisions can't even match up. I take the fucking gold medal, and he's coming in a good fourth or fifth. You know what I mean? But he didn't come around a lot. And not that I named my son after my brother, because I didn't. I named him after my father. And I didn't name my son after my father because I hold my father in such great esteem or because I'm like, I must carry on his name. I named my kid after my father. Damn, I'm going to bring it down. I'm trying not to bring it down, but this is going to bring it down a bit. But hopefully it'll be inspirational. I start thinking like the music from Chariots of Fire as I say this. Or I could probably find that and play it, but I'm not going to. So start thinking of it. So when my father died, I performed CPR on him in that driveway. What happened was, I'm going to tell this story. It's such a dark story, and I'm trying not to tell this dark story, but I'm going to tell this dark story. When my father died, him and my mom went for a walk, and they were going to go look at this stupid car because my sister lived two or three blocks away from our house. I was at home. Got a call from this guy, said, your mother told me to call you. Your father had a heart attack, and she wants you to come to your sister's house immediately. Jumped in my car, drove to my sister's house. Dad is on the driveway. Basically, as I'm getting out of the car and running up to him, I jump down, and I just start doing CPR. I have no idea what the time span is between when I got there and when the ambulances and firemen showed up, but they all showed up, and they recognized me because I was working as an EMT at the time, and the day before, we had seen each other on jobs, and they were kind of confused. I think they thought I was just a first responder. They thought I was a good Samaritan, and they didn't realize it was my dad, but I was saying things like, come on, Dad, pull out of this. So there was this moment as I was doing CPR on him, and I was just looking at his face, trying to talk to him, hoping he could hear me. I was trying to give him encouragement, and his eyes were kind of half opened, and his eyeballs had rolled back in his head a bit, and there was vomit all over his face. He had vomited, because before I got there, my mom and this neighbor had tried CPR, and they really didn't know how to tilt his head right, so they got a lot of air into his stomach, and he threw up. So he had just this image of my father's dead, vomit-covered face as I did CPR on him burned into my mind, to the point that for a good year, not a day went by that when I closed my eyes or when I stopped thinking about anything else for a second, it would just come back. And anytime my father's name was said, if anybody ever said the name Dominic, I didn't think of my brother. And I didn't think of my dad like, oh, my dad. I would think of my dad's dead, vomit-covered face. And then one day, I was told I was going to have a boy. And I had always hoped that if I had had a boy, I could name him after my father. Not because I wanted to carry on the name, not to make him a junior, not to name him after my brother, not to carry on something from the family, but to have a human being that when I heard the name Dominic, I didn't think of my father's dead, vomit-covered face. And I've got that now. and that's awesome. Every time I see my boy, every time I hear that name, I think of a little dude who runs around and watches Gumby and laughs and bites other kids at school and is a total blast. And that's cool. The other thing that's cool is I tell my kids, you know, Daddy has a brother named Dominic too. And my daughter's like, whatever. And Dominic's like, baby, baby, Gumby. But it's going to be cool because they're going to get to meet him now. And I'm going to be able to say, look, here's my brother. This is Dominic. Dominic, meet Dominic. And I can look at Liv and be like, Liv, look, see, there's my brother. His name is Dominic. Isn't that cool? And they will not care at all. But to me, that's going to be kind of nice. So, man, I can't believe I started getting into the story of my dad dying. Perhaps I should tell it completely. I think I will. Okay, so at 26 minutes, I'm just going to tell this story. I'm going to tell it all the way. I'm going to tell it completely. I'm going to tell it to the best of my recollection. And when it's done, I'm going to be done with this. That's going to be the end of this special podcast. I'm going to be taking it down a lot of notches, and it's going to be hard to make a bunch of jokes afterward. But I'm going to tell this story, and hopefully it'll be the last time I do it. Just informational, just as an archive, so that anybody who, when I mention my dead dad, or why I'm so twitchy about the subject, or why I don't know, why it's such a heavy subject for me, I will tell the story, and people can refer to this. I won't have to go over it again. So here's what happens. I got home from junior college, went to my bedroom, took a nap. Now, love the sleep. Dad was one of those people who was like, sleep is for lazy people, why are you taking a nap? So he came into my room, and he said, listen, it's dinner time. Woke up, huh? He said, it's dinner time. If you want to eat, you got to get up and come out now because your mother's not going to make something else. I was like, okay, cool. So I got up. And I told him the story of this girl who had broken her ankle the day before that I cared for and that the doctors were like, oh, you know, you really, the way you said it, we think you saved your foot and she's going to have full motion and you did such a good job. And, you know, congratulations. And my mom and dad, we had our dinner, and dinner was, never going to forget this dinner, it was veggie burgers and lentil soup. And these aren't good veggie burgers like they have nowadays, like Morningstar Farms, full-on grilled type stuff, or awesome Boca burgers with amazing flavors. And it was old-school veggie burgers. It was just pressed vegetables with some olive oil on it, which sounds good, but it's not so good when you want a burger. And then it was just dumpy lentil soup. So we had our dinner, and then my dad went into his little office that he had in the house, because he owned his own business, and dicking around after dinner, and he called me in, and he said, you know, Jimmy, I'm really proud of you. You're doing good. You really made a turn for the good this year. And, you know, like that story you told last night, or the story that you told at dinner today, it's really made me proud of you. And I wanted you, you know, and he shook my hand. He was like, you're going to do good, kid. And I was like, oh, whatever, you know, it's a job. And went outside. And there's a little kid next door who I had kind of taken on as a little brother. And he was doing that experiment in school where you try and throw an egg off the roof and make it so it can land without cracking. And I was helping him out. My mom and dad came outside. And as they left, my dad said, hey, if you go anywhere, close the garage door. Those are the last words my dad said to me. If you go anywhere, close the garage door. And they just started walking. Good enough. So we're throwing eggs. It's an early May evening. Sun is, you know, almost kind of setting. It's about 6 o'clock. Just a wonderful, beautiful day. I mean, a beautiful day. Little fluffy clouds in the sky, turning pink and orange in the sunset. And cool, crisp May air blowing in as the sun still can warm you. And I heard the phone ring. And the phone always rang. Whatever. Run, jump over the fence, this little 3-foot fence in between the houses. Go in the garage, yellow, and it's that neighbor. your dad, your mom told me to call you because your dad's had a heart attack and she wants you to get to your sister's house right now. I said, okay. Hung up the phone, got in my car, and I made sure. And this, I don't know why I hold on to it like it was such a big deal, but to me, it was such a big deal that I closed the garage door before I left. And it's almost like one of those things where if I could say something to my dad, I would say, I closed the garage door. Before I left, the night you died, I closed the garage door. So I close the garage door and I drive up and my mom's just crying, just bawling. She's like, Jimmy, I don't know, please, I don't know. And I called 911, but I wanted you to get here because I knew you'd get here faster. And I was like, Mom, it's okay, I got this. And I don't know where I got that vibrato from because I was just confused. It was like a dream, you know. It was something intangible that I had been placed into. And I said, Mom, so it's okay, don't worry about it. She's like, Dad's dead. And I was like, Dad's not dead until the doctor says he's dead. Let me try and see what I can do here. So I walked up to him, and I started doing chest compressions. And I just did chest compressions because it was just me, and there was nobody else available to do breaths. And I knew if I just kept doing chest compressions, that would bring air in and out of his lungs anyway, and I didn't want to mess around. So I'm doing that for who knows how long, and I just kept looking at him and saying, come on, Dad. I just stick with me. Just hold on till we get you to the hospital. Come on, just stick with it. And at some point, fire trucks and ambulances showed up, and guys came running up, and they were like, "Hey!" And I was like, "He has no pulse. He wasn't breathing." I arrived on scene. They were already attempting CPR. I've just been doing chest compressions. Would you like to take over? And they said, "You keep doing what you're doing. We're just going to do some breaths and get a defibrillator." So they went and got a little bag, you know, it's called an ambu bag. It has a mask, and you squeeze it, and it does the breaths. We were doing CPR, and they set up the defibrillator on his chest as I was doing chest compressions. And it was a whole thing with clear, bap, look at the sinus rhythm, go again, chest compressions, clear, bap. And we got a peak. I mean, it was just like, the dug. But it was enough of a rhythm that they decided time to transport. So I jumped off, stopped doing any compressions, and I didn't say goodbye or anything. I just stopped doing chest compressions and walked over to my mom because my mom was there and my oldest sister was there now. Not the sister whose house it was, but my oldest sister. And they were both just crying. They're like, Jimmy, he's going to die. Oh, God. And I kept saying, listen, they're putting him in the ambulance. I saw a sinus rhythm. He's not dead until a doctor says he's dead. Now, I don't know if I said that out of denial to myself, or because I actually believed it, or because that's the spiel I would give to family members when I was trying to save their family member. I don't know. I don't know why that kept coming out of my mouth. But I hugged my mother and held my sister and, I didn't cry. I didn't shed a tear at that moment. I just held on to my family members and I told my mom. I said, listen, you have to get in the back of that ambulance right now because they're going to leave. And she was like, I was like, get in the back of the ambulance now. Go with him to the hospital. So put her in the back of the ambulance. My sister was like, what do we do? I said, get in your car. Her and her husband were there. I said, get in the car and go to the hospital. And my mom, like, looked at me from the back of the ambulance. She said, call grandma and call everybody and tell them, just tell them. And I was like, got it, cool. So I just got in my car and I drove back home. And I remember it was just like being numb. It was like watching myself do everything from 2 feet behind where I was standing. So I walk into the house, and I sat down at my dad's desk in his office. And I picked up the phone, and I called my brother. I said, hey, Dom. Dad had a heart attack, and they're taking him to the hospital right now. He might die, but he's on his way to the emergency room. And my brother said, okay, cool. I'm getting in the car now. We're going to bring, because he has a daughter, he said, we're going to bring our daughter to my in-laws, and we'll meet you there. We're driving now. And I could hear his wife in the background, you know, what? Huh? What's going on? He was like, my dad had a talk. We're going. So I hung up with him. I called my sister, Michelle, and I left her a voicemail. I said, Dad had a heart attack. He's at the hospital. When you get home, either go to the hospital or call me. And I hung up. And then as I was getting ready to pick up the phone, my mom called and said, Jimmy, the doctor said Dad died. And at that point, I said, okay. You know, I can't say he's not going to die anymore, because once the doctor declares you dead, you're dead. You're going to the morgue with a toe tag on. It's over. So I told my mom I loved her, and she said, you know, please call grandma and call his brothers and call everybody and tell them what happened. I said, okay. So I picked up the phone again, and I called my brother. And I said, Dom, Dad's dead. And he said, what? I said, Dad died. Mom just called me, and she said Dad died. And I heard him tell his wife. He said, my dad died. And I heard her start screaming. She said, what? No, it was like a movie. It was like a black chick in a movie. Hey, I made a joke. It was like one of those black people in a movie when they're like, no, please, Lord God, no, oh, holy Jesus. It was a lot like that. She was kind of freaking out. And I believe he was like, calm down, whatever. And I told him I loved him. He said he loved me too. And I told him I see him at the hospital. Then I called my other sister. And I said, Michelle, this is your answering machine. Dad's dead. You should probably go to the hospital. And then I hung up. And then I had to call my dad's mother, my grandmother, and tell her his son died. Or her son died. That wasn't easy. I said, hi, Grandma. It's Jimmy. She said, huh? I said, it's Jimmy. It's Dominic's son. Oh, well, hi. My dad died. My mom wanted me to call you and tell you that my dad is dead. And I'm sorry, Grandma. And I don't remember the whole conversation, but I had to tell my grandmother her son was dead. And that's fucked up when you're 18 years old. That messes with you a bit. So that was rough. Because I've already told my brother and my sister that our father had died. And reminding you, I was 18 years old. And I was not a good decision maker. I had barely graduated high school. I was fumbling through my first year of college trying to find my footing as a human being and identify with a person that could do well and working on ambulances. And now I was at the point where I was telling my family that my dad was dead. And I was telling my brother, you don't have a father anymore. And I was telling my sister's answering machine, you don't have anyone to rely on anymore. And I had to tell a woman her son was dead. And she didn't even really cry. I don't think she quite understood what was going on. So then I called his sister. I said, hey, Aunt Ange, who since then has died herself. She died of throat cancer, lung cancer, back in 2006. I said, hey, Aunt Ange, my dad died. Your brother died today. And she was a little confused. And I explained what had happened. He had a heart attack. They took him to the hospital. And they just called and said that he died. She said, well, I love you, and please have your mother call me up and tell me when the funeral is, and we'll come out and give her our love. I said, okay. And then I called his other brother, Uncle Nicky, who is dead. He also died in 2006. And I said, Uncle Nicky, you know, my dad died. He said, huh? I said, my dad died. Your brother died tonight. And I told him the story. He's like, huh, you know, Johnny died. And Johnny was their other brother who had died that same year. And I said, yeah, no, I know. I'm sorry. And then he said, you know, I love you. Give your love to my mother. Let me know what's happening. And I said, okay. And I hung up. Then I called my mom's mother, who my dad and mom had taken over taking care of her when I was in eighth grade, so 5 years beforehand. And she basically treated him and thought of him as a son. So I called her and I said, my dad died. And she started crying. And I let her know all about it. I asked her if she could then call my mom's five brothers and sister. So there's seven of them. Her six children. And let them know my dad died. And she said, okay, I'll do that. And then I put down the phone. And I thought, oh, I think I should drive to the hospital now. And I remember making the conscious decision to get in my father's car. And it was just this little crappy Nissan Sentra, a 1991 Nissan Sentra GXE. Not Sentra, Stanza. Stanza GXE. And I remember getting in, and I could smell him because he wore Aramis cologne. I could smell that cologne in there that he drove around in this car day after day after day. And after he died, I basically just started driving that car and bought it off my mother a couple months later. So I got in his car and I was driving. And I remember about a half a mile from the hospital, I was driving past house after house after house after house after house with people in it. And I remember thinking how they were having dinner and that they were living their happy little lives, and they were probably arguing about this or worrying about that and not thinking about the people next to them that they loved, and how one minute they could be having dinner and the next minute they could be dead, and that none of these people knew that there was this kid driving past their house in his father's car to go and see his dead body. And it hit me, my dad was dead. Like, that was it. It was over. There was never going to be another I love you. There was never going to be another hug. There was never going to be another handshake. He was never, ever, ever going to be back again. And it might seem really heady, or it might seem like, oh, well, an 18-year-old thought that. And I'm being absolutely honest. Those were the thoughts I had in my head. I thought about everybody in their houses and the happy little lives they lived, and how it could all end so quickly. And I thought about how they had no idea that my father had died. And they probably didn't even care. And that was when I shed the first tear. And when they came like a storm. I remember being in the car, and I started crying so hard that I couldn't drive anymore. The car almost came to a complete stop. It was just idling down the road. And I opened the door, and I almost threw up. And I realized, oh, I need to gather my shit and get it together because I need to get to the hospital and I don't want to get in a car accident. And this needs to, I need to pull it together. So I pulled it together and I drove to the hospital. And I remember walking in and my mom was crying and my sister was crying. They gave me a hug and the chaplain was there and they were like, well, you know your father. I was like, I get it. I know what's going on. And mom said, they said that we could, you know, go see him. And I walked in, and he was very distended from all the air everybody else had put in his stomach. And they had cleaned him up a bit. And I sat there, and for the first time that I can think of, I touched his head. My dad was bald. He had like a horseshoe. And he was very self-conscious of it. I remember when I was younger, he had toupees. And he would never, ever, ever let you touch his head. He would get so pissed if you touched his head. And I remember the first thing I did was I touched his head. And I said goodbye to a dead body. And I told it I loved it. But I knew that he couldn't hear me, and I knew that he was gone. And I knew that it was the same as talking to a hamburger or a pen on my desk. but it made me feel better at the moment. And my sister Michelle got there, and she flipped out worse. I wouldn't say like a black person. I'd say like a Puerto Rican in the movies. Like, fell down screaming and grabbing things and throwing them, and you're all lying, and it's not true, and no. And it was a good act. Like, if we would have had cameras there, she would have won an award for that one. That was big. She went big. She did not fuck around with that one. She went huge. And good for her. I hope it helped her get over it a bit. But so she came and did her flip out, and then came in the room with us, sat with the body for a while. And it would ebb and flow. Sometimes I would cry, and sometimes I would just sit there, and or I'd hold his hand, or I'd put my hand on his arm. Because I knew that was it. I was not going to see this body ever again. I was never going to touch this body ever again. My dad was gone. And every minute that I was there, this flesh that used to be my father was going to get colder and deader and decay and turn to dust. So I guess I felt this need to touch it. And then my brother showed up, and he was actually pretty cool about stuff, and his wife was crying, and he sat with us for a while, and he was like, I gotta get out of here. So me and him went for a walk, and we were walking, and I was like, how you doing, man? He was like, it's rough. And it was the first time anybody involved in the situation said this, and one of the only times. He looked at me, and he said, but for you, he's like, you're just a kid. I can't imagine. I'm 26, but you're like 18. You're just a kid, and your dad died. That's going to be hard. And I just kind of thought on it for a second. I was like, nothing I can do. Okay. I was just kind of numb to it at the time. But looking back on it, he was the only one that recognized just how young I was and just how stupid I was and just how much got put on my shoulders that night and just how much I had to carry. And I still carry it. I carried it for a real long time. I took on a big role with that. And there's been conflict because of it, and there's been pain because of it. And there's been a lot of stuff that I dealt with because of it. And I think my family viewed me different after that night. That night and the funeral. And I'll tell just a small story from the funeral in a second. But I think on that night, I went from being the little boy they knew to a man that was part of their family. Because my mom and my sister saw me do CPR on my dad. My brother and my sister got the call from me, their little brother, telling them that their father was dead, and I wasn't fucking that up. I was the one who took care of grandma. I was the one who took care of the aunts and the uncles. I was the one who was taking care of everything, and I was just a dopey fucking kid. And then later, during the funeral, I don't even know where this came from, but they do that thing where they say, does anybody want to get up and talk? I said, I want to get up. So my family looked at me like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, whatever, Mom's like, he wants to talk, let him talk. So I got up, and I sort of just said, you know, I hope everybody here takes the chance to love the people around them and recognize the love they receive. Because I go home, and I give that same recommendation to you. You know, love the people around you and recognize the love you receive. And here's why. Because when I was 18 and my dad died, there were a few days in between the funeral and when he actually kicked off. And here's what I said at the funeral. I go home, and I look around me, and all I see is love. He provided a house for me, and he provided me with the clothes that I wear, and he provided me with the bed that I sleep in and the food that I eat, and he loved me so much, and I didn't recognize it every day. And I go home now, and I see it everywhere. I go home now, and all I see is my father's love. And I hope that I remember to love people every day of my life. And I hope that everybody remembers to love everybody that they love every day of their life. And then I just sat down. And everybody was just like, whoa! you are not the kid who got arrested for breaking windows 2 years ago. You've grown up a bit in the past couple days. And I guess I didn't realize it, because to me, that was always the voice in my head. You know, the voice in my head was not the kid who got in trouble. The voice in my head was not the kid who always fucked up. The voice in my head was the person who would look at a situation and say, God, my dad loved me a lot, and I should probably remember to love the people I love and let them know it, and I should probably take the opportunity to see the things they do to show me love every day. And I should probably take the opportunity to tell everyone around me, hey, all you people watching this happen, all you people who were sitting in your houses when I was driving past you on the way to the hospital to see my dad's dead body, look at your happy little lives. Look at the people next to you. Look at everything you have and love every minute of it. Because right now, there's probably someone going to the hospital to see a dead loved one. And there might be some moments that they've passed on. There might be some things that they overlooked. There might be a little bit of love still left inside of them that they weren't able to get out. Because one thing that makes me happy is that I don't feel any regrets about anything with my dad. My dad, the day he died, told me he was proud of me. My dad, the day he died, I told him I loved him. I don't feel like there's anything that was left hanging when my dad died. We were even. It was good. Everything was straight between us. And I know that there are people out there, maybe even people in my own family, who might have guilt, who might have strong emotions where they feel like things were left hanging. Because it's different, and I know this is a fact, because my mom's second husband croaked of cancer a couple years later, 3 years later. And when someone dies of cancer, you get the opportunities to say goodbyes, and you get the opportunities to tie loose ends, and you get to go through the pain and wrap it up in a nice little box. And I'm not saying it's easier, because it's not easier. Having been through it, it's a fucked up thing when someone dies slowly. It's a fucked up thing when you have to pull the plug, and it's a fucked up thing when you really, really don't have control over a slowly moving train wreck, and you have to watch someone die. That's rough. It's also a little rough to eat dinner and not be able to see someone when you go to bed. It's rough, too. Death is rough. And when people try and say one thing's harder than the other, or this is harder than that, I had a friend once who they had to take their parent off of life support. And I won't say who this was, but if you think it was you, it wasn't you. They tried to tell me that it was harder to do that because then, you know, and they tried to qualify it with me like, you know, I know what you went through and that was hard, but, you know, it was just the decision. Do we have to kill him? And it's like, no, dude, it's a hard decision either way. it's a hard thing to go through when you lose a person. And I know it. I went through it with my mom's second husband. You know, recently my grandmother died, and we had to pull the plug on her. Now, that bitch was 95 years old, so she'd run it out a bit, but it still wasn't easy. And I really didn't cry when my grandmother died, just because I knew she had lived such a full and rich life, and that book had a great end and story in between, and it was just a whole, it was a totality. But I do remember getting the opportunity to be alone with Grandma right as they had pulled the plug and she was slowly dying. And I don't know if I've told anybody this. God, whoever is listening to this, you are getting some very personal information today. I told my grandmother that I thought she was beautiful. I thought she had lived a wonderful life. And that I loved her very much. And told her she was a good woman. And I gave her a hug, and I kissed her, and then I left the room, and she died while I was on the way home. But you really got to take every opportunity to let everybody know that you love them if you love them. And I do my best. I hug the shit out of my kids. I never, ever, if I care about somebody, when I say goodbye, I tell them I love them. So the last thing I've, no matter what happens, the last thing I said to someone was that I love them. And I try not to end things on fights. I try not to quibble with people. And if we are arguing, I don't let it end and have us fighting before we see each other again. Because I know all too well that if you leave it that way, it stays up. It can stay that way forever. And resolution is hard to come by when someone croaks. So, let that be the lesson of the day. Happy Labor Day, motherfuckers. I'm going to tell you some sad-ass stories. I don't think I've ever brought it this low, ever. But I'm never going to talk about this shit again like this. Fucking wrap it up and call it done. I am never coming back to the subject this way again. I might bring it up here or there. But I'm never going to do it in totality like I just did. I'll let it out like that burp. And, yes, I can burp on command still, even after telling super sad stories about my dad. But I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to wrap it up. I'm going to call it over. This is going to be the end of Super Downer James telling super downer stories about people croaking and blah, 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 blah. And just happy Labor Day. Love the ones you got. And if there's someone near you right now, if there's someone that you care about, who isn't near you? Love the ones you got near you. Give them a hug and a kiss. If there's someone who's far away that you care about, give them a call. Send them a text message. Let them know you care. Because damn it, if you're one of the people I care about, I'd want you to know. Because I might die before Monday when everybody hears this. God, wouldn't that be sad if my last podcast was a podcast about my dad's death? And me saying how much I loved everybody and how I want them to know. And then you play, ooh, shit, did I just get noble? Oh, I got it. I did it. Remember when I said if I died before Monday, I wanted there to be noble things? This could be my noble thing. I stumbled into it. Hooray! If I die before Monday, please, somebody, Jay, anybody, play this at my funeral. Just play this podcast at my funeral. And I know there's the whole curiosity lesbian robot thing, and that might seem inappropriate, but God damn it, that was me, and that was pure, and that was real, and that was honest. And it does represent my sense of humor. So play this at my funeral. Play it after my funeral. I don't know. Hand it out to people at my funeral. Give them a card with the web address on it. Because if you came to my funeral, or if you ever do come to any funeral of mine that I have, I'm sure I'll have at least one. I cared about everybody in my life, and I tried to love everybody the most I could. So, if you're listening to this, and there's people near you you love, let them know. If there's someone near you or far away from you that you love, let them know. That'll be the lesson for today. And with that, on this beautiful Labor Day, party people, I hear the phone ringing. I gotta go. I'll talk to you later.